You know, I'm Sam Reed. I'm not. I'm Margie, your village barista once again. And tonight we have such an incredible opportunity. We have Sam Reed with us for tonight. Came all the way from Olympia. And Sam, if you don't know, is the former Secretary of State for Washington. And he's going to talk to us tonight about, gosh, lots of really interesting things, but how do we have honest and kind conversations across party lines and remain in community during those conversations. And I just want to read you a quote. This is from a man who knows Sam well. And he says, "I've seen Sam Reed work not only with his fellow Republicans, but also with Democrats, and forge alliances with anyone who is interested in making government work better. His approach is sadly all too rare in this day and age. He finds common ground, works with everyone to find the plentiful areas of agreement in the center, and then, impressively, works to make abstract policy a reality. He avoids the polarizing issues on the fringes, voter ID and the like, even if they are promoted by others in his own party. His efforts have not only advanced the field of elections, but in a broader sense, have made a real impact on citizens, not only in his state, but in other states as well. He has worked to enfranchise and educate more voters than virtually anyone of either party." David J. Becker. Just to give you notice, tonight's session will be recorded for our website, so keep that in mind as you ask questions and engage with Sam. And on that note, please help me in welcoming Sam.
Thank you, Margie. And I did appreciate those comments. That's made by the National Elections Director for Pew Charitable Trust in Washington, D.C. And so when Margie asked me if I had anything like that, I said, no, that means a lot to me when somebody of that stature makes that statement. And I guess it was with that in mind that my neighbor across the street, John Tobin, came across the street one day when he was back in our neighborhood from up here, and he said, you know, they've been having some discussions up here at Holborn Village, and one thing they've observed is that we have particularly different cultures with the construction people up here working and with folks here, and he specifically talked about himself and John Herbert as being, kind of opposite end of the spectrum and talking about the need to be more welcoming and more civil in discourse. And so, and a number of you who know me and know my work, I appreciate you've made a point of talking to me about it and saying you appreciate the way I conducted myself in my 12 years as Secretary of State for the state of Washington. I also served for 23 years as elected official in Thurston County over in the Olympia area as the Thurston County Auditor, and served for 10 years before that working for a governor and for a Secretary of State. So 45 years in the public arena, and of course a lot of people said, how have you survived this? And come out as cheerful as you are and in one piece. And it had a lot to do with the way I arrived. I was in graduate school political science at Washington State University and was hired after I finished my master's degree by the governor of the state to come over to staff a commission for him. And I agreed to do that for 2 years. And that's all I was going to do, then I was going to leave. It was actually, I had taught for a year and I was interested in teaching. Well, I never escaped, obviously. But what happened was, I had this amazing opportunity to work with some pretty remarkable people. And those of you who've been around the state of Washington for quite a while, these names will be familiar to you. A number of you from other states around the country are younger, and they won't mean much to you, but one of them was Governor Dan Evans, who was governor for 12 years, the longest consecutive serving governor of the state of Washington's history, and also served as the United States Senator for the state of Washington. Another one was Jim Dolliver, who I reported to, who was the chief of staff for the governor, and then went on to serve with great prominence as a Washington State Supreme Court Justice and Chief Justice. The other was Joel Pritchard, who was, when I got there, was in the House, State House of Representatives, then went on to the State Senate, went on to the United States Congress, where he served with great distinction, and then came back because he said he only served for 12 years, and he thought that was enough, so he came back, then he was our Lieutenant Governor. Well, they taught me some real lessons, because I was one of these young tigers, you know, full of fire, and by God, I'm going to show them. And by the way, we're all Republicans, so I need to make that declaration right away, so feel free to leave right now. And I remember I was working one of the executive request bills for Governor Evans, and we got through the House, went to the Senate, and man, I went into a firestorm. And these senators weren't just unhappy with the bill. They were angry. And boy, good, they were getting this kind of thing. So I went to the governor and I said, Governor, I really think it might be an idea to not push this bill, because if you do, you're really going to pay politically. And it'd be, you know, maybe better to let things cool down, maybe, you know, change a bit, come back later on. And his one question to me was, is it the right thing to do? Well, absolutely it was, because what I was dealing was with migrant housing in the state of Washington. And we had no standards, and there were just some horrible conditions. And it was the orchardists and some of the senators from Eastern Washington were upset. But anyway, said, is it the right thing to do? And I said, well, absolutely, it's the right. He says, well, then that's what we will do. And he used his political chips and all that, and he worked it, and we worked it, we got it through, and boy, he really did get burned. I mean, they were so angry at him, and they ran somebody against him in the primary. I mean, but what the interesting lesson on that to me was, well, there were a couple of lessons. One of them was that for those of us in politics, and those of you helping people in politics or engaged yourself, is that, you know, have the courage to take a stand for something that right now may be controversial, right now you might get burned and all, but in the long run is the right thing to do, because guess what, for Dan Evans, short run he got beat up, long run people viewed him basically as a hero for having the courage of his conviction, even if they disagreed. And I really fought. But the second thing, because I also said to him at that time, I said, you know, we're dealing with a bunch of idiots. Can't believe these guys, they're picking up. He said, wait a minute. It is so important, if you're going to be effective in the political arena, that you treat people with civility. You have to engage them. You have to realize they, in this case, the legislators, they were elected by their constituents to be here. And you need, no matter whether you think what they're saying is absolutely wrong or foolish or something, you owe them this civility. Because guess what? If you want it back from them, this is the way you need to operate. Well, I learned that also from Joel Pritchard. I was working another executive request bill, and just this case flew through the Senate, went to the House, and I had the votes. You know, you can't, both sides of the aisle and everything, we had the votes, and things were going swimmingly, and I was in the wings. When all of a sudden on the floor, things took a bad turn. And it started getting partisan. You damn Democrats, you damn Republicans. Hell, and I'm, wait a minute, what's happening? And I couldn't do anything. I was just out in the wings. I wasn't on the floor. And I was signaling to Joel Pritchard, do something. And he got up again Republican and one of the Republican leaders in the House. Locked over, sat down in the middle of the Democrats next to some of their key leadership, and you could see him just quietly talking to him. And one of the leaders got up and says, "Mr. Speaker, I called for a caucus so we can kind of let things settle down here, and a few of us can talk and see what we can do." And they caucused, they worked it out, and it passed. And I just, you know, wow. I said, so I went, "All right, Joel, what's the deal? How did you do that?" And he said, "Well, I went over and I said, don't we agree this is best for the people of the state of Washington we're trying to accomplish? And, well, yeah, we agree on that. But by God, we don't like the way you do it." "Well, yeah, so we disagree on how we're doing it. But why don't we see if we can work that out and see if we can make enough adjustments that both of us can live with it. We may not like it, but we both can live with it." You know, "Well, okay." And that's what they did. And Joel, you know, I said, "That's remarkable that you would have that kind of trust from them, that they would accept you walking across the aisle in the middle of a partisan, middle of partisan rancor and everything and do that." I said, "What is the key?" And he said, "Respect." And I said, "Respect?" And he said, "Yes. They know I respect them." He said, "They know I'm of a different party. They know I may have different opinions than they on things, but they also know that I personally will give them my respect and that they can trust me to deal with them in a fair way and they can trust my word." And again, I thought, boy, what a great lesson that is. And then I remember talking with Jim Dolliver, and again, I was a young red hot Republican. When I was in graduate school at WSU, I was president of WSU Young Republicans, and we fought the Democrats and everything, and we had all kinds of fun things going on campus. And by the way, those of you who know Washington State politics, the president of the Young Democrats then was Sam Hunt, who's now member of the State House, and ended up chairing the State Government Committee of the House of Representatives that the Secretary of State's bills went through. And it turned out, fortunately, that one thing he and I realized on campus after we got off to a rather rugged start was, hey, we have much more in common than we have different, because we both believed in getting young people engaged in the political process. We both believed in getting them involved with political parties, and we both, you know, believed that how important it was that people give back to the community and care enough about their communities that they're going to sacrifice their time, efforts, and talents to make this all the system work. And at that time, at WSU, as other colleges throughout the nation, we had a lot of people on campus didn't agree with us on that. We had, on the left, the Students for Democratic Society that were fire-breathing left-wingers who, you know, down with the establishment and really were kind of off the charts. For the Republicans, we had a group called Young Americans for Freedom, who were the same thing on the right. And in fact, they had controlled the Young Republican Club before I took over, which is one of the reasons I did it. And they thought Great Day was passing a resolution attacking Dan Evans, the Republican governor, for doing things. But anyway, so Sam and I immediately realized that we had much more in common. We could make this work. And the reason I bring that around is that when I was saying this to Jim Dolliver, he once again says, "All right, Tiger," he said, "just a minute." He said, "Do you realize that if you really want to accomplish something in the body politic, that you only can really accomplish it by working both sides of the aisle?" So the problem is, because he'd seen it, is that say your party has a majority now, and maybe have the governor or somebody says, so you find some pet billy right exactly the way you want it, and you ram it down the throat of the other party. So guess what? when they get elected, they're going to undo that bill. And then he said, that's exactly what happens. Because, my God, now we've got a chance, we're going to win, yeah. And so he pointed out just how incredibly important it is to work in a bipartisan fashion to get things done. And I must say what a great lesson that was. I worked as a county auditor for an association that a tremendous number of election reform bills through the legislature. And then when I was Secretary of State, we had many challenges because I came in right after Florida. So there was the Florida situation, the recount, Catherine Harris, and all that. And so big challenges with Congress, and I was one of the leaders of the National Association of Secretaries of State in working on this. And big challenges in my own legislature because they immediately wanted to come in and start micromanaging elections and all. And they didn't quite understand what it took to make a system work that is as decentralized as ours is in America and has as many players. And so, but these lessons I learned about working both sides of the aisle were extremely important. I was able to do it as Secretary of State when the Republicans had a majority, when the Democrats had a majority, and some people said, how do you do that? Well, the main thing I did was I established relationships with people in all four caucuses, and I developed some trust and respect, as I respected them and trusted them. So why am I telling you all these political stories? Because most of you aren't politicians, you aren't running for public office, or I'm sure some of you are engaged, but that is because what we're seeing in America right now, I think is really distressing. The polarization that has taken place, the political politics that has taken place. There are people with a real authoritarian view of what ought to be accomplished, and the problem is they get elected to the Congress, and of course then they're incapable of getting anything done because they have such a simplistic view of things, and think they ought to just be able to say this is the way it should be, and automatically it's going to happen, so they muck things up. Well, then that snowballs, because then the public gets more frustrated because nothing is getting done, so why God, we need, we're seeing that this is causing more polarization throughout our country. And in Congress, partly because of the way redistricting has worked and all that, we're seeing more single-party districts. The reason redistricting works that way is because the geopolitics of our country and up here in the state of Washington, but also most states where we are seeing the Democrats dominating their urban areas and particularly the centrals of cities and such, and the Republicans dominating the natural resource areas and the rural areas. And it used to be there was much more of a mix. You know, when I first came to Olympia and worked, we had Republicans elected from Seattle, we had Democrats elected from the most rural areas. John is from Endicott, and I have a friend, Mike Lowry, who's from the governor, who's from Endicott. One of the most hardcore Democrats I know, this day and age, it's hard to find a hardcore Democrat in the rural areas. So it has made our politics much more challenging. But I think that all of us as citizens need to focus on making the system work. We need to demand more of our elected officials and articulate more our expectations of them to be able to work within the system. This is also true of many of the social issues today. We, in the past, used to view these as issues that we would debate and discuss and resolve and move on, and in this day and age, that doesn't seem to be quite the way it works. You get madder and you start picketing and you get fierce and everything. So I'm very concerned about it, and I think it is really important that we all, and particularly people like yourselves who care so much, that you're come up here to Holden to spend some time and work with others and care enough about people and care enough about your communities and all that, that you want to make a difference. The situation for me is that as now I've been retired, and Washington State University gave me a great honor when I left. I thought it was an honor at first, but anyway, of creating the Sam Reed Distinguished Professorship on Political Civility and Civics. Oh, by the way, you need to raise the money to pay for as my wife Margie will tell you, that ended up, my first couple of years after retiring, I ended up working awfully hard. We did it. And we actually had the person appointed, first professor, a couple months ago. And she's remarkable. And she actually is at WSU Vancouver, which was a little surprise. Everybody expected to be over in Pullman. And for those of you in other states, probably familiar with Vancouver, right across from Portland. And Washington State University has a branch campus there. Mm-hmm. She has done remarkable work there in that community, in the Vancouver community. Some of the toughest community issues that were polarizing people, and there was a lot of anger and all this. They've had her come in and work with them on how to resolve these issues in a more civil way, and how you can argue, how you can, you know, stand up your points. Don't be a wimp just because you want things to work and everything. But on the other hand, how you respect others and you're willing to work it through and agree that you are going to come to an agreement. And so if you're in communities around the state of Washington, I encourage you to invite. Her name is Dr. Carolyn Long from WSU Vancouver. If you can't remember that, just have John Tobin let me know, and I'll send you an email or something and give you that information. Because part of what she's doing, and that I spent a lot of time in my last few years as Secretary of State doing, is working with young people to reach out to them. And what she's doing is training students on how to do this. And we had a meeting last Tuesday down in Vancouver of the advisory committee for this distinguished professorship. We had two students who came in and told us their projects and what they were doing, and we were really blown away what they were accomplishing already. But one was just 19 years old, and it was really remarkable what she was accomplishing already. When I was Secretary of State, I went to every campus in the state of Washington. Now, usually not all of them, like maybe 25, 26 of them in a week, though the more I got, the more I had to move over to another week. In the last year of my term, we actually went to all of them. And it's all the colleges, private, public, all the community colleges and technical colleges. And I have some good news for you, and I think for many of you this won't be actual news, but sure is good news for me, and that is how deeply impressed I was with these young people about their commitment to their community, and they're willing to give back to the community, to give their time and efforts and everything. And I think it's partly because, you know, a lot of them realize in high school and college, in order to build your resume and to get good recommendations and all that, in some high schools now, and actually some colleges, they require some community service and all. But what is interesting is, while they may have started doing it just because they think they have to or something, what they found is, hey, I really enjoy this. I enjoy the sense of accomplishing something, of giving back, of making a difference. I think there's reason to, you know, be heartened by this in terms of our future. What I was doing is saying, all right, you know, because what they were doing was, you know, doing community service projects. I said, what you need to do is also work now in the political process. You need to register, you need to participate, you need to get involved, make a difference, find candidates who believe in, you believe in, and help them out. And I do think there isn't as much of that as we need to have at the moment. So I thank you for having me here, and let's see, is there anything else I was particularly... Nope, I think I pretty well said what was on my notes, but what I heard when I was invited, and I think what Margie told me, is that that you always have a lot of questions. And some of you may even have a point of view. I didn't believe that part. But anyway, so questions, comments, yes?
I've been dismayed, or I think a lot of us have, by the amount of money going into politics these days. And just what are your thoughts about are we ever going to be able to go back?
The money going into campaigns, which is what we're talking about, right, campaigns, because there's money for lobbying and everything. But anyway, the campaigns is an issue that I worked on for many years, and it's one of those issues that's trying to stop water from flowing downhill. You know, you need just here, just there. But because of the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, for freedom of speech and freedom of participation, basically, and the political process. And so it's going to happen. But what I think is really unfortunate are these independent expenditures that we've had in our state for a while, and now the federal government, they're well in a broader way because of the Supreme Court decision. Because what I think works best are two things. One, if there's total transparency about where the money's coming from and to whom it's going. But secondly, to require that they actually go through the candidate's committee so that the candidate can be held accountable and responsible for it. I will tell you, as a candidate, I hated it. I got fined $15,000 my campaign by the Public Disclosure Commission for something that had been an expenditure to. Now, candidates can't know about these, and we don't know. We don't have a clue. These are done totally independently by somebody outside. It's a violation of law. If we or anybody in our committee, our campaign, anybody knows. And by the way, that is something that they really stick to. I had a friend who was running a legislature down in the lobby area, had independent expenditure where the person said that the position of this guy didn't believe it. In fact, he had the opposite position, and it really hurt him. So I really think there needs to be some accountability, because the worst, most obnoxious, most highly negative and contentious ads are done by these independent expenditures that don't have to go through candidate committees. Mm-hmm. But I think, again, we need to keep pushing on particularly the candidates themselves, and say that, you know, we don't want this, then what we candidates need to do. I remember what I did, and unfortunately, this was after the fact, it didn't make an difference, but in like presidential campaigns and some of the federal campaigns, gubernatorial ones, where these things go on, candidates need to dissociate themselves and demand that the people who are running these ads take them off the air or stop mailing them. I mean, they need some sense of accountability and responsibility for it. Other question?
Thanks, Mr. Reed, for coming and for speaking. You talked about how you established relationships across party lines, and that was some of the most helpful experience for you to be able to then work with these people. Can you tell us what you found to be helpful in establishing those relationships? How did you go about doing that? Both personally and professionally. What was your,
did
you have a strategy, or what
was helpful for you? You posed the question in the right way, both personally and professionally, because it is both personally mm-hmm. and professional. One is that, you know, it's really easy to vilify somebody.
Yeah.
Those damn Republicans, all a bunch of rotten people, they don't care about, you know, those darn Democrats, they just want to waste money and ruin the country, and, you know. But wait a minute, you get to know somebody, and all of a sudden, wait a minute, this person is, in fact, that's what I had happen many times. gosh, I didn't know there were nice Republicans. You know, but spending time chatting, you know, have lunch, have coffee, whatever, and don't necessarily talk politics, but you can talk about your kids, talk about sports, talk about why you happened to get in your political career, how did you get in your political career. But then talk about things that you can agree on. And now, it helps, I'm a moderate Republican, and you know, that made it easier for me, I suppose, than some of my Republican brethren who are more conservative. But you do hear that happening even with really conservative or Republican real Democrats, where they make the effort. You know, like Ted Kennedy worked with one of the most conservative Republicans in the Senate from Utah, and they had a wonderful working relationship, but it was because they decided, rather than fighting or what they disagree with, they're going to fight together for what they did agree with. And plus, you know, what I think is important is that in my public utterances, which you do many, you know, as a statewide official, that I don't get caught in this trap, which is easy to do in Republican meetings, conventions, all that, of, you know, aren't those Democrats? Like, I handled the recount for the Rossi-Graybar race in the state of Washington, closest recount, gubernatorial recount, statewide in the history of the nation. The Republican won. First count, the Republican won the first recount. Then when we did a hand recount, the Democrat won. So to this day, I will have questions. Why did you let the Democrats steal that election? You know? And, well, you know, it'd be easy for me to fall, easy to fall into some partisan rhetoric and everything. Well, of course, you know what, these days, there's always somebody got a phone and filming it, or you know, recording it, or something like that, and I think that is foolish, and I know I was always very careful not to fall into that trap, because it's easy to get carried away when, you know, like I spoke to Republican conventions, you know, there are, you know, thousands of them out there cheering you on, and your adrenaline gets going and everything, you know, and you feel competitive. All of us are competitive. Run for these offices, or we wouldn't be running, you know. So we're competitive, Republican versus Democrats, and we want to win some races and everything. But it is just important that you take the long run, Bill, not the short run, Bill. The long run is you need to work with everybody. Another question,
Mr. Reed.
Yes.
You got one
up there. Yeah. Mr. Reed. Well, that's because you're young.
So, as you've talked before, that you have worked bipartisanship with other Republican senators, or I should say Democrat senators, did you ever find yourself, this is a bad term to use, but do you ever find yourself defacing your own values? Or at least you feel like you're like giving up your values to pass something,
right?
Or did you have an example of that, where you said, "I have to compromise this so that way we can work together"?
That's really a very good question, and we've seen it. I bet you've seen it, haven't you? Where somebody, because they dying to get this bill passed, or dying to get elected, that they will say something or commit to something that you just know is the opposite of their deepest heartfelt convictions. And you can't do that. Now, I'll tell you why you can't do that, and that's because if you're not true to yourself and you aren't frank with this person you're dealing with about, well, wait, I can agree to this, but you know what? That's off the table. I won't even discuss this because, by the way, it's my personal principles and where I stand. Because when people do deal with you, this is true both sides of the aisle, if they don't feel you're being honest with them, and you aren't, then guess what? They're not going to want to deal with you in the future. But also importantly in this respect is that you lose your self-respect, and I've seen that happen to some political people, where it's really kind of a shame. They start off, it's really, you know, trippy, you know, eager, hard-charging people, but they get so caught up in the system, they start kind of selling themselves out. And some of it is to get support or endorsements. You know, this union or that business will say, well, no, I know you haven't been with us on this, but look at, if you will just budge a bit and agree to do this, then we will give you our support. Well, some people who are in a tight race, tough race and all that, it's so easy to want to do that. But again, you've got to stay true to yourself, or it just doesn't work, and it doesn't work for a long time again. Yes?
And to take it kind of the opposite track, it seems like we have so much gridlock because people are taking an extremely principled stand and are not willing to compromise in any way. What should we be doing as constituents to assist them in actually governing by passing legislation?
You're absolutely right. And a lot of what I've seen in people like that, and some of the most frustrating people to deal with, is they confuse having a standard like, I'm a fiscal conservative, you know, I'm here to make sure that we're efficient with, you know, our expenditure of funds, that we don't waste money, I'm so determined. Well, now comes along a bill that's increased spending on mental health. Oh, I can't do that because I'm against spending, you know. Wait a minute! What are you here for? You know, if you're not going to deal with the real issues and provide service to the people that they need, I mean, that's why you're elected to public office. Now, if you think, well, you know, this is going to cost too much money, and we don't have it in our budget. All right, well, where should we go in the budget to find that money? Now, that's always been my answer to the question is, well, good, let's look elsewhere. And guess what? In every case, I can't, not just Canada. Good thing it's not.
We have another five.
Worst way! But anyway, that is, you're absolutely right, and I think it is one of the maladies right now of the current process. And you see this in the far right and the far left, both of them are digging in. And one thing that's happened, in my opinion, is really unfortunate, are these people who work in the big middle of the political system, they're diminishing numbers. And partly it's because of this the redistricting that I was talking about, we're getting more one-party districts. I was elected in Thurston County. Now, that's an Olympia area. Now, people who know Thurston County know it's dominated by Democrats. Mm-hmm. So, if I'm going to be elected as a Republican, guess what? I better be flexible and work with everybody and not dig my vignette on stupid issues and such. I'm not going to be around very long. And the same is true being elected statewide as a Republican in the state of Washington. And what is interesting is most of the statewide officials that I've dealt with on both sides of the aisle have been very much very moderate and willing to work well. In fact, it was interesting, we would have breakfasts over at the governor's mansion of the statewide officials. And I remember there were three Republicans and five Democrats when I was in my second term, and so the issue would come up for discussion. We kicked around the table, and I remember somebody observing afterwards, yeah, you wouldn't know who's the Democrat and who's the Republican, because we're all focusing on the issue. And let's talk about this now. What should be done? What could be done? And the same was true when I worked in the County Auditors Association. I remember sometimes going back to my office to look up now, was this person Democrat or Republican? because it didn't make a difference because we were talking about real issues and how to solve real problems and not getting, you know, really partisan. Another question.
I'd like to go back, I'm up here. I'd like to go back to what Dave said, though, is what, and associated with you bringing up redistricting, what are your suggestions to try to change or ameliorate the situation that we have now? One, if, you know, we live in a Democratic district and our representative is Democratic, great. What else should we be doing then? Or vice versa? Because it does seem that we feel very frustrated.
My advice, given that situation, and is that you, and if you can organize other people in your district, other Democrats in your district, let this person know that you're going to measure that person's success and your support of that person, not by how partisan that person is and whether it follows the party line in every vote, but how much they reach out and work both sides of the aisle to actually get something done. And, you know, that works. I've made that, of course, now I'm in a little different position, right? You know, being a statewide official, but I've made support for candidates contingent, including candidates for Congress, contingent on this. And they have followed through on their commitments and been criticized for it. But I think that all of us need to let, you know, our representatives and members of Congress and all know that we really measure your success for how you're serving the people and how you're getting things accomplished and not by how your party is winning votes. One of the things that I heard in Olympia that you hear back in Washington, D.C. as well is, and just irritates the heck out of me, is, hey, let's put this amendment out there and make them take a vote on it. Even though it's a bad amendment. even though, you know, they realize it's not actually anybody, but they, so the next campaign we can use it against them, we can do a mainline, you know, that kind of stuff. And that kind of stuff just destroys relationships and poisons the atmosphere. And we've just got to get beyond that. Yes.
Following up on a question, I haven't read a whole lot about California's example, but looking at reapportionment out of a different, taking it in a sense, out of the legislative hands, and having different approaches to commissions and that, did you consider that much when you were
talking?
Yes. I imagine you did, but just to add on that.
Yes, and we in the state of Washington are fortunate. It's not a perfect system, but we went through some reform back in the 80s, and what we established was a system where a bipartisan commission, does the redistricting, and the Democrats in the House appoint a person to represent them, Democrats Senate, the Republicans, and then they jointly elect somebody to chair the body. You have to agree on this person. So obviously this person is a non-partisan person. But anyway, and before redistricting could be adopted, three out of the four have to agree. And what we have seen is four out of the four. I have to agree every time. But it requires some real work. That's hard because also the standards applied by the U.S. Supreme Court decision are very strict in terms of population, but also communities of interest and not gerrymandering and all that. And it's not perfect, I said, and the reason I said it's not perfect is because the parties are appointing these people. And so guess what? One of their jobs is to protect the incumbents. And so they may even be willing to give up a few districts. But they're not willing to give up their incumbents, you know. And I understand, I heard that Iowa, I don't know if there's true anybody here from Iowa, I heard that they have a system where they have people who are not affiliated with any one of the parties. They just go and they redistrict. But it is a vast improvement over having the legislature. If the legislature does it, it's, I've always viewed that as a form of political cannibalism because they decide, you know, who their own they're going to eat, and it's really vicious. And the party who got the majority of that time stayed to the other party and met it, which brings me to talk. Another question?
I have a question up here.
Up there?
So do you have any advice for those who may be interested or feel called to public service in how to start out or anything along those lines?
Yes, my first advice is to encourage it. There are a number of young people in the Washington State Legislature now, and because a lot of times young people say, well, you know, we can't do this, we're not old fogies, we're not, you know, we haven't been around long enough, or think, well, I don't have a big special interest group that's supporting me, you know, I don't have, or I'm not part of a family that's been established, political family. In the state of Washington anyway, and I hope a number of your states, that really isn't relevant anymore. So a couple of people I helped, one was a young woman who was 23 years old, who ran and was actually ridiculed for being so young and all that, and she was a Republican by running against an incumbent Democrat who was kind of, that had been there too long, was stale, wasn't doing anything anymore, and but they said, you know, this young woman, and she won. And another, 24 years old. One thing I've been impressed, both sides of the aisle in the state of Washington, we've been really getting some good young people coming. Now, how do you do it? Well, it was really important that you don't just say, gee, I'm politically ambitious, I want to run for office, but rather you get involved in the community, you take on, say, some volunteer work a little bit and show some leadership, get some exposure, because what you're doing is networking, among other things. In other words, pick out things where you're going to, people are going to get to know you and the jurisdiction you're interested in running in. And then the timing has to be right. Just because you happen to want to run doesn't mean you can win. Politics and timing is really important. So, say, an open seat, or like the case I mentioned where an incumbent was getting stale, wasn't working very hard anymore, also meant they weren't campaigning hard anymore. So pick your shots. But run for a purpose. Don't run just because you want to be somebody or you're going to feel important or whatever, but rather because you really have some heartfelt convictions and you care, you want to make a difference, you want to contribute something, and people will know that. Because you get up and give, you know, talk to the, you know, potential voters and constituents and all that. If you're just reading something or some of the talking points the political party has given you or something, you know, people will go, yeah. But if you get up there and with some real personal conviction or talking and but it has to be relevant to them. In other words, just because it's relevant to you doesn't mean it's, you know, going to be relevant to them. So it has to be something relevant to them. But with conviction, you know, you can do it. But you need to have a team of people believe in you and care about you. And it doesn't have to be a very big team. It can be 5 or 6 people. But again, you very obviously need to start it out. Okay, another question or comment?
There was one over here.
Yes.
You have such an admirable approach and such a distinctive career.
Well, thank you.
Do you have any reflections to offer in terms of how your faith has shaped you or sustained you throughout?
I was fortunate that I grew up in Wenatchee, though we moved, I think, sophomore high school to Spokane, but grew up in Wenatchee, and My grandfather, Sam Sumner, after my name, I'm Sam Sumner Reed, was very influential in my life. And he was a person who had served in the Washington State Legislature. He had been county prosecuting attorney. He had been state chairman of the Republican Party. And was a trial attorney, a lawyer, and quite the character. He could tell stories that just wowed us grandkids, you know, about when he was young, you know, because he was born in 1879. And and our Sunday dinners would be like going to church, because he would talk about the importance of service and of serving the public, and how important it is. And he did believe that politics is the highest calling, and but how important it is to care, to give back, and participate in. And so it had a profound impact on me. It wasn't like, as a young boy, I said, gee, when I grew up, I'd run for office. It wasn't like that at all, but I certainly, you know, had that message. And then I found as I grew older that being in public service is what really was fulfilling for me personally. It gave me a sense of accomplishment. And so,
Sam, what resonated with me and is still churning around in my brain from everything you've said tonight was the conversation you had, which ended with the question, is it the right thing to do? Mm-hmm. If we could bring our country around to a political environment where that question was always at the center, instead of so many other things, wouldn't it be wonderful? My question of you is,
you're absolutely right. Yeah.
And I love the fact that you put so much faith during your conversation with us in young people, in what they can do for this country. Yay. But is there a place right now in this political crisis for senior statesmen like yourself from all over the country to come together in some sort of consortium to help us through this crisis?
That's a pretty big question. Well, hey, the time's up.
Look at the time.
Lovely. Actually, you know, I had a question. You phrased that very well, actually. The question is sort of like that. And what is interesting is we've seen some people try, and it's very difficult. And it's because I think we have failed. We in the political establishment have failed a number of people in this country. And as you would assume from my remarks, I'm kind of horrified by Trump and everything he stands for. And what he's done, you know, I said it. My talks were on civility, moderation, and bipartisanship, and his talks are on the opposite, you know. But, man, is he connecting with some people who feel like nobody has heard them.
Yeah.
They don't care about them. They are people who, a lot of them have high school educations, and they used to be able to go work in the factory and make a lot of money and a living wage and support the family. Now they find themselves either without a job or you know, getting minimum wage or something like that. And I believe very much in free trade. We in the state of Washington have been big beneficiaries of that, by the way, for those of you from other states. We're the most trade-dependent state in the country. And I've led trade missions to China and Vietnam, India, and all that. And I really see the benefits of that. And I think America is tremendously benefiting from it and will. But they're losers in this. And we, again, haven't been responsive to those folks and helping them out and making it work. On the Democratic side, I think it's clear from the Sanders candidacy and all that, that again, establish a field. I remember discussions about income disparity, you know, years ago. We would talk about it over beer and all that. But, you know, nobody has really got in and addressed it. And, and talked about some of the problems that manifest itself through that, and how the middle-income people were not doing well, or either plateaued or even gone down proportionally. And so I think this has been a real wake-up call for the political establishment. I hope it has. And I think some of our leaders around the country are beginning to get it. It's interesting, some of the columnists at first just throw things ridiculing Trump and Sanders. All of a sudden they're saying, I kind of get it here. I realize that, you know, and again, not that they are approving of the way that Trump is doing it, but they realize that that he put his finger on something that we, and of course we're seeing it all over the world. Margie and I were, Margie introduced me, but Margie, mm-hmm. who I'm married to, and I just were in Europe, and we're Trump-type folks over there too, you know, who are in the different countries who are talking nationalism, authoritarianism, and stop those refugees and from coming to our country and ruining our culture. It ain't like it used to be. I think we really have some challenges in front of us in terms of how we handle it. I don't think some of us standing up right now between now and the election is going to make a lot of difference. But what I am doing, I'm chairing the mainstream Republicans of Washington, which I didn't need a big job like this, and it has been a big job. We are fiscally conservative, and we're conservative in the sense of being local government is best, and state government, but we're moderate in terms of environmental and social issues. And so we've been working very hard to recruit candidates, mainstream candidates, and get them in there. And we've been succeeding over the last few election cycles, and I think that is important. And I think on the Democratic side, they've made some progress, but there needs to be more focus on that too. Because when you come right down to it, it's the people you elect, and when they elect people from the Tea Party who are from the hardcore far left, of course they aren't going to be able to work with others and get things done. They're just going to get them up to work. So. We've got to focus on where we can make a difference. Okay, any other questions? Yes?
I just kind of alluded to this earlier. What do you think, looking back at the last 15 years, what's driving the polarization, particularly in national politics, that we're seeing, for example, the resurgence of, or not the emergence of the Tea Party and those kind of things? And what are the structural things that are driving that? Looking back
across that. And again, that's the answer is really complicated, but just briefly, part of it again is, as I said, is the districting and redistricting, and partly because people are tending to congregate more together than they used to. And so while the suburbs are still tending to be competitive for moderates like me, when I ran, even though I've had a number of people today say to me, I'm a Democrat, and all that, I should vote for you. Well, guess what? In the city, downtown city of Seattle, they didn't vote for me there. Even though, I had a very good reputation, I was being endorsed by the Seattle news media, I was being supported by prominent Democrats and things, but like 25% among the Seattle legislative districts, and 35 in another. And so there is a problem of that. The second problem is what I'm referring to with the Trump and Sanders issues. I think that has caused, because it's partly the people who disagree with me, I'm not thinking, gee, to disagree with me, we need to talk this over, because, I think this, what do you think? Maybe we should talk this through. Instead, it's, those people are wrong. And in some cases, even they're bad people, and all. And so it has really caused, you're right, it's really caused some problems in our political system. And I think, hopefully, that the pendulum will swing back and we're going to see more reasonable, because this has happened throughout our political history, we've had times when we've seen political polarization, we've seen horribly negative, you know, campaigns all the way back to the John Adams, Thomas Jefferson presidential race, which is one of the ugliest in American history. Things can change and should, but we all need to try to make it happen. So
you spoke about redistricting, which makes sense that it would lead to polarization and also the inevitable correction of these kind of things. Historically, what has been the correction that has led people back from John Adams, you know, shooting people in Congress like they used to do, you know, dueling?
By the public finding repugnant that we've done so far, and the next time they have candidates, the 10 to support candidates who are not going to be hurling invectives and raising righteous indignation and saying these people are, you know, the devil, but rather are going to be constructive, are going to say we're going to go and make things work and all that. And so, anyway,
what role does the media have in this, in the election, and some of the things we've been seeing?
That's interesting because the media certainly is playing a shrinking role, and partly because of the different media platforms and everything. And one of the things I saw as Secretary of State as I went along was that, like when I was overseeing the recount for that governor's race, I told you it was the closest American history. My problem wasn't the news media per se, the newspapers, radio stations, the regular radio stations, the news programs and all, and television, but it was the blogs, the talk radio stations, some of the cable things going on, and they would get off on some wild rumor about how this fraud going on in the election or something that just totally unsubstantiated. But the problem was, because it was going out over the internet and all that, you know, hard to put your finger on it and hard to stop it. And so that is a problem. But I do think that at least the major media needs to play a role. And maybe you probably watch, as Margie and I do, Shields and Brooks on PBS NewsHour on Friday evening. And don't you wish there were other news people who could discuss things, you know, like that and present a point of view and not be insulting and not say the other one is, you know, or trait or talk over them and try to, you know, shout in their face or something. But I do think they do have some responsibilities, and again, I think we have responsibilities in terms of expressing to the news media our expectations of them. Okay. By the way, Margie and I appreciate being welcome and said farewell to within a few minutes. Anyway, yes?
Well, this might be
a little bit
off topic, but we've been talking a little bit about global climate change, and certainly that's happening even within our country. And as that occurs, you know, I think we're going to find more polarization between those who have and those who have not. I'm just curious if you have any, if you've seen that personally, or if you have any thoughts about it.
What I see kind of quietly developing are some people trying to work together to come up with some practical solutions that can get bipartisan support. And there's enough, there's some work being done even in initiative level on that, and it's going to be interesting because, yeah, you're right, that's one of these issues where both sides are saying, yeah, the other side are idiots. No, that's the problem. The other, you know, they don't know what they're talking about, and it immediately became a polarized issue. Well, not immediately, because actually, wasn't George H.W. Bush, the old Republican president on climate change? And so the Republicans were the first ones, you know, kind of making an issue to try to deal with the issue. And But that's what I've heard. Anyway, I realize that's the last question. So again, thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.